Welcome back as we continue to learn how to make and preach sermons. It's both a making and a preaching as far as later on we're going to get to the idea about how you present your message. But we're in that section that we're called introductions. Thinking about the introduction is an important hook. Now, just a review of where we've been. The first section of this class was on preparing for a sermon. In other words, how do you prepare yourself? Well, you become a person of prayer and you get other people to pray with you and for you. You study a passage, and we looked at those important kind of definitions like exegesis and homiletics and hermeneutics and et cetera, these words that are bandied about when it comes to sermon making. And we then went through a period called developing the sermon. And we're in that section called introductions, which is a story we saw as a powerful introduction and an intriguing question. Now, repetition by various people is a mother of learning, so educators say. And so I want to introduce you to a woman named Ann Ricketts. Ann is the director of Lighthouse Communications. It's based in San Francisco, and it's a consulting group that helps businesses. This is not necessarily preaching, but businesses figure out how to communicate their message more effectively. Well, Ann is somebody who works with speakers to help them become more effective in speaking. And she does this brief four-minute video on how to do killer introductions. And I just want you to hear her. Now, this is somebody from the business perspective, but also, I think, says things that relates to us as we think about making sermons. And you'll find them very relevant, I think. So spend the next 4 minutes looking at Ann and what she has to say.
Have you ever seen Law & Order or CSI? Well, if you have, you know how those shows start. They always start with a crime. Someone's running in Central Park, they come across a body, they call the police are there, and then you're hooked, you're engaged, and you have to know what happened. Then, only then, do they play the theme song, the dun-dun-dun-dun, and you see the credits. You might be wondering, what does this have to do with presentation skills? Well, just like you want to start off a show and hook the audience, you want to do the same in a presentation. And we know this in theory, but I'll tell you, about 9 out of 10 speakers I see start with their version of the theme song. It goes something like this. Hi, my name's Ann. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for coming. In a minute, I'm going to tell you a story. And on and on and on. And the speaker could be 1 or 2 minutes in and they haven't said anything interesting. Guess what? Now your audience is on their phone. We can do better. My name is Ann Ricketts. I'm the founder of Lighthouse Communications, and for a living, I help people deliver more effective presentations. I strongly believe that introduction is the most crucial piece to your presentation. And in this video, I'm going to share with you a 4-step formula for a killer introduction. And if you follow this, not only will your audience be leaning in, wanting to hear more, but you will be bursting at the seams with confidence from giving such an amazing introduction. You ready for the formula? Step one is your hook. A story, an analogy, a metaphor, a shocking statistic, a question, or a combination of those things. Something interesting and vivid right away to pull them in. Step two is the transition to your topic. Bridge the gap between that hook and what you're going to talk about today. You can say something like, you might be wondering what CSI has to do with presentations. I tell that story because this story illustrates. Step three is your self-introduction and a preview of your talk. If you don't know the audience yet, you can briefly introduce yourself. Just give them the most interesting things from your background that directly relate to your topic. And remember, you can establish credibility throughout your talk, so you don't have to give them a full bio. And then go ahead and preview what are the goals of your talk, what will you be covering. Step four is the benefit for your audience. Tell the audience what they will gain from listening to your talk. Don't assume that they already know. You should be specific. Now that you know the 4 steps for giving a killer introduction, let's break it down and let's look at the introduction to this video. Have you ever seen Law & Order or CSI? Well, if you have, you know how those shows start. They always start with a crime. Someone's running. So that was my hook. I asked the audience a question and then painted a picture of a common experience of watching these crime shows. You might be wondering, what does this have to do with presentation skills? Well, just like you want to start off a show and hook the audience, you want to do the same in a presentation. That was my transition to the topic. I bridged the gap between my hook and what I'm going to cover in the video. My name is Ann Ricketts. I'm the founder of Lighthouse Communications, and for a living, I help. That was my self-introduction and preview. I briefly introduced myself and established some credibility on the topic, and then I told the audience what we're going to cover in the video. And if you follow this, not only will your audience be leaning in, wanting to hear more, but you will be bursting. Finally, that was the benefit. I told the audience specifically what they will gain from watching the video. Now you know the 4 steps for giving a killer introduction. Try it out and let us know how it goes. Write a comment on Facebook or on our YouTube channel, and be sure to subscribe to the Lighthouse Communications YouTube channel.
So I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope you found it effective as a way to pattern your introductions. She says you've got to have the hook. That's what we've been talking about with story and shocking truth, that these kind of things can be the hook that get people to say, whoa, I want to know more. I want to hear more. I want to do more. And so, you know, we've been talking about introductions for some time now, and we've talked about how do you hook people in. Then a transition to the purpose for your message. It's a transition into the message. And then she talks about self-introduction. Now, many of us don't have to worry about that because we're the regular preachers in our church or wherever we are in ministry. But some people, if you're a guest preacher, you might want to say a few words about yourself in self-introduction. So we have looked at a couple of things in introduction so far. We have seen that the storyline, can make a powerful hook, can show us a way to get into people's minds and hearts. That's a powerful, powerful way of introducing ourselves and introducing the message. And then last time we looked at intriguing questions, about how an intriguing question can grab people's attention, say, yes, I want to know the answer to that question as well. Well, today we're going to look at what's called shocking truth. This can be a powerful, powerful introduction that will get people into the message and help you transition in a powerful way into your message. Now, I'll give you an example. You know, I had a part-time middle school director in the last church I served, and she was just really good at her ministry. She was in stuffed in a little room because we were out of room in the church building we were using. And she had built this ministry from nothing until she had about 50 kids stuffed in a room that was designed for about 12 to 15. And so, you know, she stacked them on the floor, and then there were beanbag chairs, and then there were regular chairs, and then there were the stools, and so that they could be kind of in this array before her as she would talk about her lesson and prepare the lesson. Well, we asked her to bring a message to the whole church, especially as we were talking about doing an expansion of facility and what that was going to involve. And so what she did was she got all of the kids of middle age in the church to sit together one Sunday morning. And she started with a shocking truth. And the shocking truth was that in the United States, the statistics right now are that 70 to 75% of these kids, of middle school kids, will drop out of the faith by the time they're out of college. 75%. And then she walked down into the audience and she dismissed the rows of kids until 75% of them were gone. And there was this gaping hole in the auditorium that just had been filled with these kids. Now she said, just imagine all of them dropping out of faith. And she just stood there silent for a few moments. And it was, you could sense tears. There were tears in the audience because some of these were parents of middle school kids, grandparents of middle school kids, people who were brothers and sisters, and some were tears thinking about that shocking truth that right now, how can we stop that, was how she went on. And she began to talk about becoming a church that built a legacy. And so this kind of shocking truth can be a powerful way to draw people in. And she then went in to talk about legacy, about passing on faith to children, what we needed, what research has shown, Christian research, on how to build faith in kids, and how every kid needs at least 5 adult contacts who are not their parents, who are encouraging them in their faith. And she signed people up to become mentors of kids, to become people who are preparing them to profess their faith, to launch them into the world. And there was a movement that day in the church that has blessed that middle school ministry, and that was about 4 years ago, and now it's in a revamped facility, and it's thriving. That ministry is thriving today, but it all began there as the church made a decision that we're going to be a church that's going to turn that statistic around. So, shocking truth. Now, there are some warnings that come with shocking truth. Here's one of them. Overuse can lead people to tune you out. In our society in the United States, and probably where you are, people who make television programs have learned that people get immune to shocking truth. We get tired of it. In fact, years ago, they talked about the compassion fatigue that people would experience when they saw starving people on television. It no longer had the impact on them because they'd seen it so much and felt so powerless to do anything about it that eventually it just didn't make any impact whatsoever. And so as you think about your introduction and using shocking truth, beware, you can overuse it. And if you overuse it, people will start to tune you out. You can't come every week with a shocking truth. Often you can. There's enough of it out there right now that you can do that. But make sure that it is it's used effectively when it's not used all the time. Another warning: it's got to be appropriate to your subject. In other words, you can't just go taking a trip over here or over there and then expecting people to tune back in. In fact, people, if you use a shocking truth to begin something, they will say, "What?" if it doesn't apply to the message. I remember listening to a message that way where the pastor began with a shocking truth about the number of people leaving faith, not just young people, but adults. And then it was just like he was angry about this, but wasn't part of the message. It didn't relate to the main point of the message. And so it was kind of like afterward you're scratching your head saying, "What was that all about anyway?" And so make sure it's appropriate to your subject and it is a genuine lead-in to your subject. And then make sure your shocking truth is accurate. Now, what I mean by that is that there are fact-checkers available today. Information's available online all over the place. And if you give shocking truth to someone, they might go back and say, "I want to check that out. Where did he or she get that information?" And they can go online and find out how accurate you are. And if they find out that you're inaccurate, they're going to start writing you off. I was just reading, because politics is big right now. We are in the United States in this election cycle again. And there was a story that came out that the whole Russian investigation of President Trump was a hoax, that it really started with this young man who was killed, and that the conspiracy theory was that, you know, he was the guy who started it, and then it got blown into this whole idea of Russians trying to interfere with elections here. And turns out the story, it was a shocking story. I mean, what? We've been listening to all of this stuff about the Russian interference, and then all of a sudden it's not even true. Well, turns out it wasn't true. Fox News Network hadn't done their homework. And as a result, they put something out there that wasn't true, and all of a sudden, the listenership of that particular program went diving down because it wasn't accurate. You've got to make sure that what you say in shocking truth is accurate. Now, where do you find shocking truths? Variety of places. Local history, local news, our news in general. You can find it in newspapers if you still do newspapers where you are. You can find it on television. You can find it on the internet, certainly. And these are usually things that don't immediately come to mind. I mean, it's hard to find a shocking truth to say, you know what, I want to introduce this sermon, so I want to find a shocking truth about climate change. It doesn't often work that way. Sometimes it does, but more often it's something that you've just come across. And then in the process of making your sermon, you say, oh, you know what? That shocking truth would be a good way to lead into this. You know, for climate change and being stewards of creation, that's one of the things we Christians believe, that God has given us the charge to take care of the world. And so how do we do that in a time of climate change? And boy, all kinds of shocking truth about how species are disappearing, about how glaciers are melting, about how waters are rising in the United States as a result of climate change. Shocking truth and shocking truth. But those are ones that you would come to mostly because you said, oh, you know what? That would be good. Now I want to find out more about it. And so be aware of things that you could say, yep, that will work. That will work as a shocking truth. Now, so that's shocking truth. Another good introduction is humor. Making people laugh is a good way to draw them in. They'll build rapport with you, and they will give you all sorts of license to go ahead and tell them truth from the Word of God if they laugh at the introduction. And there are all kinds of humor. Here's a list that somebody came up with. Self-effacing humor, personal anecdotes. You know, those are good, especially if you're not the hero, but you're kind of the, you know, the joke's on you. Similes, metaphors, quotations, lists, predictions, one-liners, puns, props, stereotypes, etc. All of these kind of things, jokes that you might have run across that would be fitting. And those are the kind of things that can introduce people in a way that will say, oh, yeah, I want to listen to more of this guy. He seems to be, or this woman, he or she seems to be a really down-to-earth, normal kind of person. And so as you think about your message, you can think about humor or a story that you've heard. Now, there are some warnings that come with this type of introduction. One is, it must relate to the message if it's going to be a good introduction. There are people, in fact, very well-known people, who don't practice this. Here is a man named Joel Osteen. He pastors a church of tens of thousands in Houston, Texas. And he is well known. He writes books on motivation, self-motivation. And, people listen to him. They tune him in on television. He's on the radio. He's everywhere. But I'll tell you frankly, as somebody who's trying to teach you how to preach, his introductions are sometimes terrible because he likes to start with a joke. But the joke has nothing to do with the message that comes. So I just want to give you a brief clip. At the beginning of one of his messages, here is Joel Osteen telling a joke. As he says at the beginning, I just want to start with something funny.
God bless you. It's a joy to come into your homes, and if you're ever in our area, please stop by. I promise you, we will make you feel right at home. I like to start with something funny, and I heard about this positive farmer and negative farmer. When it would rain, the positive farmer would say, Lord, thank you for watering our crops. The negative farmer would say, yeah, but if it keeps this up, it's going to rot the roots. When the sun came out, the positive farmer, Lord, thank you for giving our plants valuable nutrients. The negative farmer, yeah, but if it keeps it up, it's going to scorch the crops. One day they went bird hunting together in a boat. The positive farmer just got a new bird dog. He was so proud of him. He shot a bird, fell in the water, said to the negative farmer, watch this. The dog jumped out of the boat, ran on top of the water, picked up the bird, ran back on top of the water, put it in the boat. He said, what'd you think? The negative farmer said, I should have known it. That dog can't even swim.
Now, it's a cute story, right? But his message was about waiting for God, that sometimes we're placed in God's waiting room. And during that time, he develops us, and he develops our perseverance, he develops our faith. And it was a message about that, and that story had nothing to do with it. And that's one of those, when I sit there as somebody trying to help you learn how to preach effectively, say, don't do that. It will get people's attention, but the attention will have nothing to do with the main point of what you want to teach, and that is God's Word. And so use humor effectively and make sure that it relates to your message. The second warning, it must be appropriate to the situation. If you tell a joke that is inappropriate to your audience, you could offend them. Or it could be inappropriate to the situation. I blew it this way just a couple of weeks ago. I was doing the funeral of a man who had committed suicide. I'd met with the family. I was devastated. The man was 54 years old. He had been through a very difficult period in his life and decided to kill himself. And he did that. And I wanted to make a point at the beginning of the message that this feels so wrong. And I told a story, and it was a story about, you know, little kids in Sunday school, and the teacher was telling them in a very dramatic way about Abraham sacrificing his son on Mount Moriah, and how, you know, very dramatically told the story of 3 days' travel and marching up the mountain with Abraham and Isaac, and Isaac asking, "Father, we've got the wood and we've got the fire. Well, where's the sacrifice?" And Abraham says, "God will provide." And they get up there, and Abraham's about to plunge the knife into his son, and when a little child in the group says, "Stop! This is too horrible." She'd never heard the story before. And then another little child in the class says, "Oh, Mary," says, "don't worry." Says, "This is a God story. They always turn out okay." Now, I didn't intend it so much as a joke, but some people were laughing. But then what I wanted to do was move on from that introduction to the transition. And the transition was that, you know, according to Scripture, all of our lives are a God story. You know, Psalm 139, the psalmist says that every day written for us was written in God's book. Every day that we were going to live was written in God's book before one of them came to be. And how sometimes God's stories don't turn out okay. And it makes us wonder why. And so I talked in that message about why. You know, where was God? Those sorts of things. But if I had to do that over again, I would redo that section there. So it must be appropriate. And that's the story. I want you to think about how you can use humor, how you can use shocking truth, how you can use intriguing question, how you can use story to introduce your message. Now, sometimes the introduction you're thinking about before you write the body of the message, sometimes it comes after you've been working on the body of the message. But the introduction is more important than you think. That's how I introduce this section on introductions, and I say it again. Next time we're going to turn to how you develop the body of the message.